take a breath, 767-97-601. If you guys do have any questions, I've got it up on the screen now. But I wanted to ask you a basic question, Jerry, about this Bill of Rights. Tell us, how do we get that in place? And what sort of amendments to the Australian Constitution would need to take place for that Bill of Rights to come into effect?
Well, firstly, simply how we get it into place is we raise it in Parliament. It should be raised in the Australian Senate, a Bill of Rights proposed, and then developed and crafted. But we don't want to rush a Bill of Rights. We need to get the Bill of Rights balanced, calibrated, and representative of everybody. In a nutshell, a Bill of Rights is about the basic rudimentary legal rights of every individual. No one should have no legal representation or no access to representation or be in a position, the invidious position, of not being able to afford representation. Everybody should be availed to representation, but not just rudimentary representation, representation that's of a high quality caliber, and that can be ensured by that being afforded by the nation. And that can be done. We are a nation of incredible asset wealth, a nation of incredible sovereign wealth, the 12th biggest economy on the planet, nations with lesser asset wealth and poorer than us in terms of the economic firepower, have Bill of Rights and have access to representation for all their citizens superior to what we have in this country. So in the end, it's about the basic legal rights of individuals to have a voice. And it's that voice that we need to have for all mothers and fathers, for all individuals, for all children in this country, for all citizens and for all residents. And that is what a Bill of Rights is about. Also, what we need to do is empower a Bill of Rights so it can only be amended by referendum, by referenda in this country, not at the discretion of what has been going on for decades and has increased increasingly so, which has led to the erosion of our civil liberties and our privacies and our rights, and led to greater surveillance and to more accountability, where one government after another comes in with its biases, conscious or unconscious, with its prejudices, with its ideologue, and crafts and changes. And you look at the Migration Act, you look at 501, you look at the erosion of civil liberties and digital rights and the rights to privacy, and to that balance and need that was more finely calibrated, and they can obliterate it within one passing of a bill in government. So what we need is a Bill of Rights that's extra legal, of a constitutional value, that will require the people of a nation to make decision by referenda if there's to be an amendment to it, whether that's to change something, reform or improve. So a federal Human Rights Act or a bill must protect the rights and make impermissible for the unaccountable for all citizens and all residents, give voice to some of who I've described in terms of residents, the special visa residents, the permanent and temporary visa residents, the refugees and the asylum seekers, but also to the majority of Australians, to the 25 million Australians of our 27 million population who are citizens of this country. And let's not forget that a warrant can be issued, and often warrants are not required, and suspicion alone can lead to detainment of individuals who are citizens, and also their workplaces can be raided. For instance, if I just briefly refer back to that First Nations Department of Communities worker who had her home raided after documents and reports were leaked, accusing the Department of Communities and the state government of knowingly being clued in to racism systemic throughout the Department of Communities. And her home was raided by 10 police officers and in front of her children and her husband. And that's not the way we should be in this country, making people invisible and at the discretion of unsubstantiated or weak grounds and suspicion alone. And she's actually disputed the fact that she was the leak. And what we need to have is what I'm saying in our Bill of Rights, a whistleblower protections, the right to conscientious objections, and have that layered definitively to articulate what should be protected under whistleblower laws.
Right. Okay. So basically, a humane system. One that actually protects people that speak up. And when these people speak up, these people often, and they know before they even speak up, that they're putting themselves in danger of being prosecuted or losing their job, losing their livelihood, maybe even losing their careers, and yet they still speak up. These people should be protected. That should be written into the Bill of Rights, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think this Bill of Rights not only should protect us in our own country, but it should protect us in other countries. When other countries have arrested Australians, we should do everything in our power to make them, those other countries, with agreements to bring those people back here to Australia, maybe serve their sentences that they may well have to have served, but bring them back here to serve their sentences.
That's actually important that you raise, Mark. That's actually a very good point, because it goes to the fact that a few years or a decade ago, I fought hard to get 158 Indonesian children released from our adult prisons that the nation did not know about, the public consciousness did not know to the extent that our government's actually knew that we had minors in adult prisons. And the fact is that consular notifications don't exist, and treaties between Australia and all countries don't exist equally amongst each other. And with some countries, we don't get consular notifications of citizens arrested in the country of their travels from Australia, and in other countries we do get those notifications. We do get those notifications from China if someone's been arrested on Chinese soil who's an Australian citizen. We weren't getting those notifications from our closest neighbour, Indonesia, of whether someone's arrested there, or we weren't notifying them of Indonesian children or any Indonesian national who was arrested in our waters for fishing, for instance, in international waters or in Australian waters, or who had been arrested on our continent for some breach. And we've got to ramp that up. And a Bill of Rights can ramp that up. So that's and it would be a surety for that type of notification to be procured.
Yeah.
And we should be in the know. If we're not in the know, then people are left unaccountable, invisible. And that's what we're trying to make. A Bill of Rights simply will make visible everybody, and then we'll ensure access to rights, and then we, such as legal and other representations, welfare and health representations, and then create the capability and galvanise the investment that should be had to prosper those representations, to prosper the right to legal representation, and of a nature and content that of equal value to what others can afford. And that's the more just society than we can have. And a just society that works towards levels of equality is a humane society.
Definitely. Well, it sounds pretty good to me. Just hang on a second while I play some... still got Jerry on the line all the way from Kalgoorlie. Thanks for being on Noongar Radio again with me this morning, Jerry. Let's talk about the fact that we're locking up children. I really want to get to the fact that we've got kids, little kids, being locked away from their parents, kept in dark places, all alone. This can't be good for them, and it's obvious that it isn't good for them, and they rebel even more when these things are happening to them. What are we going to do about raising the age?
Well, raising the age will happen. That's a battle that's actually effectively being won. The Australian Senate in 2019 voted against raising the age, and that's an indictment and an abomination, a hideous reprehension of who our governments actually are, and also the lack of expertise in our parliamentarians, not able to actually come to the conclusion that they should raise the age and then craft the types of supports that should be had for those that need to be remanded in some other form of community-based resource secure facility, or to and also for the supports that need to be crafted, the intense psychosocial outreach-based support for children bailed to families, and also for children who won't be held criminally responsible at bracket up to 14 years of age, which is effectively to 13. When we say we raise the age to 14, we're saying that the children 10 to 13 years of age have not cognitively widened and have not critically received that type of cognition in terms of their formative development, their biological development, and can make them fully liable for their actions. But there will be some form of... we can't do it without support. So, yes, effectively, do not jail children, release them, but support them. So what we must do is fund and support and craft the one-on-one supports that need to be had, because we can't just exhaust families with aberrant behaviour. Some of these children who are 10 and 11 years of age or whatever have been turned in by their families, First Nations, migrant-born, and Australian families in general, black, brown and white, have been turned in by their families because their behaviour is so aberrant. They're with the wrong crowd, they're living below the poverty line, they're in disadvantage and suffering most Australians find unimaginable. So we've got to raise the age. Simultaneously, we've got to actually work on the ways forward. It is naive to just say raise the age and not actually at the same time take opportunity. We cannot delay the raising of the age. The raising of the age must galvanise, and we must be putting as much onus on how to support them, release, and how to transform restoratively their lives and support the families or the carers to support these young ones, some of them who have no safety nets at all. And let's not forget that some of these children actually have no parents, have no carers, are homeless, and we have children abandoned to the street. So we've got to put in other supports, and we've seen a Department of Child Protection Family Services that is removing children at incredibly high rates and is spending more on removals now and perceived risks as opposed to supporting young ones. They're now crying out here in Western Australia for more workers, caseworkers. Well, I'd be crying out for more nurturers, more support to help these young ones. What's going to happen to these young ones when they're released and they've got no support, and especially the ones who are homeless and finishing up on the streets? I can tell you harrowing stories, but I know your listeners know them. And what we've got to do is actually get that expertise into the Senate by advice from all the different individuals, and in my case, get my expertise into the Senate, pray on a miracle that I get elected so I can take a new level of discourse to the Senate, relentless discourse, and cover all bases. And then, yes, we get the raise of the age, we get the psychosocial support, we get the crafting of the supports that need to be had to give families a chance, and carers, and also children who have no carers or support, to have a reasonable shot at improving their life circumstances and a better life.
Yeah, sounds good to me. Sounds good to me. All right, Jerry, I'm going to let you go. Go and have a rest, because it's almost an hour already you've been here on the air with us at Noongar Radio, and I expect to be able to get you back here again on Thursday next week, if I can possibly find you wherever you happen to be.
Next week, brother, I'll come to the studio and I'll bring a guest. I'll bring someone who is the face of the restorative of change, of how it can be done. And what I do want to encourage your listeners is, we've been talking about voice. We've been talking about voice in the Bill of Rights. We've been talking about voice in the Human Rights Act. We've been talking about voice in terms of legal representation and the right to have that representation, legal, health and welfare, all sorts of voice. But there's one voice that they've got. And even though it's a narrow corridor of discourse politics, they've got the right to vote. And many of our listeners, many of our sisters and brothers haven't registered to vote, aren't eligible to vote. I argue, get yourselves registered to vote. Megan Cracker, my colleague, has been registering sisters and brothers all across the state, assisting them with their registrations to be eligible to vote by the time of the election. We have the power of the vote. And whatever that's worth, we must max. We must max. Get yourselves registered to vote and vote. Vote for whoever you want. In our case, we're not running in the lower house. We're running only for the Senate. Whoever you want to vote from a political party, whether it's a political party or other independents in the lower house to form government, and whoever you want to be government to lead this nation, you will have that right. Whether you want to vote Labor, Greens, Liberals, Nationals, micro parties or other individuals, you will have that right, and we're not going to sway you or argue who you should vote for in the lower house. I'm a left-winger, so it's obvious what I think. And we're bleeding heart. But we are asking for a Senate seat in the upper house, which is the Senate. We are asking for one seat of the 76 seats in this nation, 12 seats in Western Australia, in the Senate. And we're actually asking for your vote. Consider us, Google us, find out who we are. Some of you know who we are. Spread word, we can mobilise. But you have the power of voice, and just get yourselves registered to vote. And don't think that you shouldn't, because in the end, your vote does matter.
Excellent. Thanks very much for being on Noongar the Radio this morning, Jerry.